Hey all, this is Ego and Vice episode 10. This show is going to be the part two of the interview that I did with Eric Worley, part one being episode 9. You can go back and check that out. Very interesting guy, very seasoned guy in the Ottawa music scene for a behind the scenes look. The first episode kind of touched on, or the first part of the interview touched on more of where Eric's been, how he got into the what he does. This continues on with that, but he also gives a lot of great advice to local bands from a sound person's point of view or from a promoter point of view on the good things and the bad things from his experience and his knowledge, what you can do and what you cannot do to help yourself out, I suppose. One thing this one will also do is show you that the deeper I get into an interview, hence part two, the more beers that start flowing, and the more times I ask the same fucking question over and over and over again. So bear with me anyway. Eric's great because he answers the same question like in three different ways. So being the pro that he is, thanks for carrying me through that one. But yeah, listen to it. It's really good. We have some songs and shit that we're going to play as well. So, like I said, this is Ego and Vice, episode 10, Eric Worley, part 2.
You've got a real attitude problem, McFly. You're a slacker.
You did a lot of hip-hop stuff in Ritual.
Yeah, it was crazy.
They had like a corner of that scene there.
I couldn't have been more fortunate. I went from working with New Cap Radio and all the alt-rock station here in town and working with like just Canada's top talent to I went to Ritual, which was essentially built by friends of mine who were like a couple of the main people bringing hip hop into Ottawa. So a lot of the shows happened there. And I obviously, like we chatted about, I really grew up and listened to a lot of hip hop in the '90s. And then suddenly I was mixing all these guys and it was awesome. It was a nice change of pace too, just to go to a spot. And then suddenly it's like to completely kind of switch some genres like that. And
cool.
And start meeting all these guys and being let down by actually meeting them. Like, I loved you. You were awesome when I was there. I'm sorry for bothering you.
Who are some of the guys you mixed at Ritual?
I suppose I start with everybody from Wu-Tang except for possibly Method Man. Flatbush Zombies, Waka Flocka, Classified, some of Canada's Swollen Members, Mad Child, Tech N9ne, it's endless. Like a who's who of people that I thought I knew and didn't know and then now knew, and to people that I grew up listening to.
Was it at Ritual where you met USS?
No, that was a Live Lounge gig. That was an epic.
Oh, way back
that
when.
That was an epic Live Lounge gig, like first Live Lounge.
Oh shit! Well, let's talk about that.
Okay, that was they had had their first single out on the radio, and the radio station wanted them to play a show, and we had them slotted in as an opener for a local act, and this night's kind of. They came in and they had the hit. I think this was their second time in Ottawa, but like their first real time in a real venue and not a coffee house. And and people came out and loved the show, and there was a good crowd and everything was great. And I felt so bad because at the end, they were opening up for the local headliner. And after they killed the stage and Ottawa got their first taste of USS, everyone just left and the energy was just diminishing and the interest was lacking. And I had to go tell the headliner that it was his turn to perform.
No, man.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough.
Do you want to talk a little bit about USS? Like, who are those guys?
Ubiquitous Synergy Seeker from Toronto.
You've heard them on the radio, folks.
Yeah, and they're probably going to say 6, 7, 8 radio singles at this point over the last 10 years that I've known them.
And since that original Live Lounge, you're talking about like when it was the the food pantry or the
yes.
health food store, like
yes.
the original
yeah,
Live Lounge.
The first 350 person venue that they were in before we moved to the 180 spot.
Sure. So since that, what is your affiliation with this band? Because I know you guys are buds. Like you guys have been overseas. You've been
Just growing friendship and obviously representing the radio station and them having so much of their music played. They'd end up in Ottawa and we got to be better friends. Some parties at my place, hanging out. I was growing as an engineer while they were like really getting their feet under them as, you know, predominant artists on alt rock radio at that point. So
for sure.
We just had a good time, and then I got to know their music, and then as a fan, as an engineer that they really enjoyed working with, we started to go beyond that into some rehearsals, re-examining their tracks and how things were sent to the sound engineer from their perspective and what the sound engineer could do with it. And into meeting their management, into mixing them, you know, getting phone calls and going and mix them at a 1,500 person venue in Toronto one night, and then to mix them in a pub at a university the next night, and then to just this year where we were over in Europe with them. And
where'd you go? Because I remember you were sending me like texts from fucking Paris because it was really warm there.
It was
something.
Hot. It was so. It was literally the hottest place on earth in the last like 8 months was Paris when I was there, and there's not. AC apparently is next to non-existent in the place for some reason. And it was just me, myself and the lead singer would share a room, and we'd lay there with like cold washcloths on our face praying for sleep. It was just, it was really, really just the hottest
don't
part
let me,
of my summer.
Don't let me die.
But yeah, we went over, it was Factor supported Canada 150 showcases over overseas, or at least the first one was, where we started off in Paris. And it was super cool. Our green room was the Canadian consulate, and we were essentially playing an outdoor venue right beside the Eiffel Tower. And it was, there was some local artists involved. Franco-Ontarian artist Mehdi Cayenne was overseas. A couple of local acts started the night, then him, and then Sam Roberts was opening up for us, and then, of course, we were headlining this showcase just prior to Canada Day.
Amazing.
And then, of course, they're releasing their album in Italy, so we went to Milan, where I just got to hang out and eat the wonderful food and enjoy Milan while they were in meetings and talking to Warner and, spent a couple days there. And then we went into Austria and we did some gigging in Austria, which was just ridiculous. So.
And that was like this summer. That was just a little while ago.
Yeah. Our last show was at this festival that's essentially, I think it translates into a festival for the people. And it's free to get into, and there's literally just a couple hundred thousand people like at the main stage. It was
just wanting to hear some fucking.
I was at Eminem when he came to Oceaga a few years back, and he hadn't performed in like 6 years or whatever because of his drug problems and stuff like going on. And it was probably the biggest crowd I'd ever been in.
Just bananas.
60,000-70,000 people, and that was crazy for me. But then at this other festival in Austria, it seemed like triple that, and it was just the sea of people was just mind-boggling.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And then
no, I can't imagine.
And then
actually.
Well, but then free. Like it's a free.
That's I don't even know what to say about that. You told me those stories before, but that's fucking like crazy rad. And
got to meet Kay Flay. That was my big thing too. And check out a set by Kay Flay, who's you know, big single "Blood in the Cut." Mm-hmm. Recently, has been killing the radio, and that she was tremendous on stage. And
cool.
Yeah, and just got to be with my buds.
Well, that's it. It's, you know, it's not, I was about to ask you, like, what's your future with USS, but it's just like, they're your friends, like, come what may, right?
Yeah.
Just taking it for what it is. And
respectfully, you know, they know I'm there for them and can travel. Not living in Toronto makes me not the regular first option, but they know they can call me. And then, you know, even whenever I just feel like I can head out to a show and hang out and say hi, and which is fun. And
cool.
But obviously, I love getting the call. I did a couple more festivals with them over the summer, which was amazing. And we chat music and get to listen to things, you know, prior to anyone else. And
that's rad. Well, you know what? This is kind of unprecedented. I focus on a lot of like local music on Ego and Vice, but let's play a USS song.
Okay.
What do you want to play? What do you want to hear?
Do I go latest hit?
I have absolutely no permission to play this, but I'd like to think that you will smooth it over with them.
They won't mind at all.
Yeah.
Well, I can't say that. They're already someone's messaging. Don't play this.
No, it's fine. I don't care.
What would you like from their repertoire? Like, I as a fan, like, I could pretty much pick a whole variety of songs.
It's up to you, dude. It's your show.
You know what? I'll go with one of the recent ones then with Who's With Me.
All right. Okay. From the permission of Eric Worley, this is a USS song. This song is called Who's With Me.
Who's with me?
was with my white mate.
Wow. So that was USS, Ubiquitous Synergy Seeker. Who's with me? I know that wasn't loco, but in respect of the guest that I have on tonight, Eric Worley, played that song. And it was a good one.
Thank you.
You like that one?
Yeah.
That was chosen by you.
Yes. Yes. But Markham and Stouffville, if you'd like to know, is where the two co-lead singer frontmen for USS are from.
Markham and Stouffville. Markham, yeah. Ontario.
Yes.
And Stouffville,
yeah.
Ontario?
Yeah.
Okay. Very Canadian guys.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow, very good. And they're doing fucking great.
Yes. Yeah. It seems like to be an endless adventure. They went to Japan just recently, which was...
Weren't you supposed incredible. To go to Japan? You were talking about maybe going.
I obviously sent the email out and talked to management and was just told them I'd work on my Japanese if they needed me to. But no,
I could give you lessons.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
No, at that point, it was just about getting there and getting exposure, working with house engineers, because obviously like there's a big expense and then the returns aren't there yet with, you know, the draw obviously here in Canada is much bigger than...
Sure. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I guess so. And how was the trip? Did you talk to them?
Oh, amazing. Life altering as usual with those guys as they get to hit new places and play new venues and, you know.
So what does the future hold? It's just up in the air. We'll see how it goes, or
for them?
No, for you and them. For the whole unit, for the whole crew.
Oh. I yeah, who knows? I never know what email I'm going to get any given day from them or from anyone else, I suppose.
Cool. You went to Colombia?
Yes.
Was that with USS?
No.
Okay.
No, that was with my friend Adrian Linden,
okay.
Who at the time I met was front of house for Said the Whale.
Okay.
And we, yeah. And
you did some work down there with them as well.
Yeah, you know, we went down there for entire February, maybe 2013, 2014, I think. And, yeah, he invited me down, and we were getting closer to a time period where I wanted to start planning it, lining it all up, and I messaged him and was just, hey, were you serious about this? Because, you know, I, you know, obviously I meet people that have been pretty much everywhere in the world at this point, but I rarely meet anybody that's been to Colombia, so I wanted to hop on that.
And sure. And you went down there kind of blind. You're like, I'm just going to go.
Oh, yeah. It was, yeah. No, I pretty much almost got deported as soon as I got there because I didn't know where I was staying. So, and then, of course, when you're going through customs, that you needed like a fixed address as to like a hotel or where you're going, right? You can't just be hey, I'm coming to hang in Colombia.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Not, I guess I didn't really fly, but I ended up in back rooms and everyone's speaking Spanish and I didn't know anything. And I had a little book out and I was trying to like look up words they were saying. And
there was some festivals down there, a festival that you did, that you worked at.
Viavo Love Festival, year one. So we're in the heart of Colombia. We're not in the beaches and in the outskirts. We're in like cowboy country, farmer country in the middle.
Uh-huh.
And they had not had like, I guess, this type of rock and roll festival on. And my buddy was friends with major promotion, production people that are down there. And we got in and suddenly I was in meetings with, you know, permit meetings, promotional planning, sponsorship planning, and looking into... You know, how can we start year one off and what's how to put the best foot forward?
Okay. And do you plan on going back for?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. Amazing. It's wonderful experience. And obviously I got to stay with my friend's family and on a farm down there. And I have plenty of spots to stay at this point. And I know that I have an open invitation back. So
that's cool. Yeah, fucking, you've traveled like crazy. One place I've never been. Well, fucking one place. A place that I've never been is Europe. Like you've been to, and you know, and I'd love to go there for any reason at all. I've been through the States, I've been through Canada and stuff, but I've never gone to like Europe and that. So I'm very envious of that. So once the USS tour from Europe. Kind of wrapped up. It's you're kind of a freelance guy though now.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. So what do you do? How can we get a hold of you? Can I hire you to do something?
You can hire me to do a lot of things.
How do you keep yourself busy? And
I've Well, I suppose since I haven't been doing a regular venue gig, it's just been word of mouth, prior contacts, and then just new opportunities. Like Bacon Palooza with the Museum of Agriculture, mm-hmm. that they were sent my way through New Cap Radio, who said because they wanted bands. And I guess an event like that, I've been stepping in to help coordinate between bands, costs, look at production, look at the equipment that's being used, if it's appropriate, and just trying to make production more affordable for companies.
Fair enough.
And
so you're still pretty in or affiliated with New Cap Radio?
Not so much anymore. Obviously, there's still a family relationship. There's like 10 years of being working with them. And then obviously, if they do have something that falls into all we need to do is give this to Eric and then we don't have to worry about it again, then I know I'm getting an email or getting a call from them. So.
And is it a lot of work?
It just depends on the event. It can be. I just threw that concert at the Aviation Museum for mm-hmm. the high tech company, which was obviously bringing in a stage, accounting for the number of people, the space we had, power and access to the power, and just fitting into their budget and their evening.
And you still do a lot of networking with like local bands. You still talk to a lot of local talent.
Always
try to bring people out.
Always available for any local artists if they're looking to put on a show. I can help you put your best foot forward. I can tie you to bands who I think will put in a good effort to come together with, whoever else they're playing with to have like a successful show, mm-hmm. Promoted well, and just essentially anything along those lines, concert lines for anyone local, I'm more than willing to do. And then, like I said, I take someone like the Museum of Agriculture and they wanted artists and they wanted it to fit, their weekend. And that's where it's just I've gotten to grow up and know all these people and meet all these people. And I can be like, we want these guys, this guy, and these artists, I shouldn't say these guys, these artists.
So do you work like more with like established things, or do you ever promote your own stuff? Like, do you ever put on your own shows or?
Absolutely. Again, if someone just wants some help, if I want to tie in, say my name into the promotion just to get my own exposure, mm-hmm. then yeah, ultimately, I suppose my approach is always it's the band show. It's the artists that I'm trying to help out, and I'm not overly concerned about my own, whether my name's on it so much or not, but I just want to make something successful and then mix
sure.
it.
Yeah. Promotion of local music is kind of what I'm trying to push on Eagle and Vice, and I think Eric is an amazing guy to have on because he's done so much within the local community, also just done so much in his own life, and he's a very interesting dude. We have some questions for you.
Okay.
Questions. Are you ready for the rapid questions?
I'm ready. Okay.
So I'm just going to play my rapid question music here.
Oh.
Yeah, just let it play. Questions and answers. Honesty lies. Yes, no, you can't. But you can and you know why. Shit. You must be fuckered, man. Like, what's he talking about? Any questions? So that was my fantastic brand new rapid question intro music, which I worked about 4.5 minutes on, so fucking enjoy that.
Epic.
Okay, so every time I have a guest on the Eagle and Vice podcast, I kind of go through the question period. The first ones are kind of generic, and they're always kind of the same, but I'd like to hear your take on it. I'd like to hear different opinions from different artists, musicians, whoever they are.
I hope I get these right.
All right, so, Eric Worley.
Yes.
Your biggest musical influence?
Oh, then you stumped me right away. I don't. Well, then not playing in a band. That's an interesting question for me.
Well, solve the problem.
Biggest musical influence, Peter Gabriel.
Okay. Why?
There's a live album from Spain that just acoustically is wonderful to listen to, and I've owned the album. It's about came out about 94, I suppose. Secret World Live, and it's just something that sonically just
You can go to
reinvigorates
it.
Reinvigorates me. And yeah, you're just listening to just what's going on in that live recording is tremendous.
Awesome. All right. These are rapid fire, so I'm not going to pull too much out of you.
That was
no, that's okay. The next one is the first record you bought, CD or tape? Like actually with your own money. We touched on this slightly.
With my own money. Obviously the first ones are all sorts of gifts. I'm gonna go with White Zombie Astro Creep 2000.
Nice.
I took school off. I don't want to say skip because I think I might have been able to sign myself out or something at that point. I mean, so maybe it's not my first album, but this is the first one that came to mind. But I stood in line, was one of the first 50 people, got a T-shirt.
At the CD store?
At Record Runner.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, downtown Ottawa, the classic.
Nice. Okay. Next rapid fire is guilty pleasure music. Stuff you probably don't want to tell people, but you still enjoy it.
Duran Duran. That was easy.
Wow.
Duran Duran, Depeche Mode, Pet Shop Boys.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I dig it.
I'm so full of shame now.
Okay. My last rapid fire before we get into the fucking dirt is
the intervention part of
what is your desert island music or your solitary confinement music? If you had the choice of having one record for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Right now I want to say Foles What Went Down.
Foles What Went Down. Like Ben Folds 5?
No. No, like Avenged 7. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
No, the band Foles from the UK right now. Okay. I played you one of their tunes like a while. Like during the summer, we sat in my backyard. I played you a tune.
Oh, you did?
And
yeah.
I've just been really digging them.
That was when I was going to start the podcast, and I actually brought out the interface. I'm like, will this do a podcast? Yeah. And you're like, dude.
Some deep thoughts in my backyard.
Yeah, you'll be all right. All right, cool. We're going to get into some more deep questions that were put forth Eric in mind.
Oh, by who?
One was sent by a fan, not so much for you, but it was sent to me.
It's amazing.
But I want to ask you about it. And I'm sorry if I'm name dropping and I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but the first one is, what are your thoughts on the pay-to-play models like Landmark Entertainment showcases here in Ottawa?
Oh, wow. In terms of, say, if someone wants to put on a showcase and have you involved, am I going to knock pay-to-play? I don't know if I can do that. I don't. But if you're going to do it, have people there representing your company. Have a proper showcase. That one's a tough one for me because I'm mixing some of those events where there's no real judges, there's no people there. So possibly it's just based on ticket sales is how someone's moving forward. Like I do definitely don't agree with that. Prior to being of age, obviously having opportunities to get on real stages with real sound engineers is fairly limited. So in some ways for the kids who are, 16, 15 and can't play that opening slot at a 19 plus bar, mm-hmm. it does give them an opportunity to get on these stages. There's silver linings, there's good and bad to it. I don't know if I've answered the question so much.
No, that's good. It's good to hear your opinion on it too, because if there was that event that was put on, there's a very good chance that you'd be the sound guy to do it. And I've been at those events where Brian, we were talking about,
yeah,
back in the old Capital City Music Hall, where that shit would start at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and go till like 2 a.m. and
yes.
there'd be like 25 bands,
17 bands yeah. that I'd mix, and then the people running it didn't ever do a show before, and there's about 3 minutes between bands, and there's no thoughts on eating at some point or
yeah, get up, get do your thing, get down, and next.
Yeah, I fundamentally, structure it the way you want, but ultimately, in some of those circumstances where there's no one there where these kids can get feedback about why or why not or what was good or what path they're going down, and like you need to have that there, and that wasn't represented in some of these, so I would. That's discouraging for me, especially if you're going to do some sort of a competition. But, You know, again, I want to, I suppose I fundamentally always want it to be about growth. So.
Okay. Have you, okay, cool. Let's move on. All we don't want to, we don't kick the shit out of that.
Yeah. Jerks.
As a sound guy, actually, I'm going to skip the,
That's a juicy one.
Yeah. Okay, let's do this one. If someone wanted to get into sound engineering or production, booking, etc., which you do,
yeah,
how do you go about it? Like, we all know that you start a band and you play and you call like a bar or whatever, but if you didn't want to be like the person on stage, you wanted to be
and then just
someone behind the scenes who
get opportunities as an audio engineer.
Yeah, sure.
The first difficulty is that it's just so limited. You know, you look at.
Is it a really tight market for?
Yeah. You,
Do you feel a lot of competition? Yeah.
Not so much. It's not so much competition. It's just there's established people already in place. And say you've got five or six venues, but you know maybe there's 100 people that want to do sound. So it's tough to get in. Like I was, again, fortunate for the path that I got. I didn't. No one else will ever go down that path.
Mm-hmm.
And coming as tough as it is, like I do get asked a lot if people can come out, you know, shadow me and watch and whatnot, and I'm more than willing to help anybody, but then you just don't do it just once, keep coming out, like
perseverance.
Meeting the bands, going to the shows, supporting the local scene, going to the venues, getting seen in the venues, and then showing your interests and passions is obviously the best start.
And just sticking with it. Can people reach out to you if they wanted to shadow you, though?
Absolutely. Anything, promotion, booking, live sound engineering, just anything that I could might, from overseeing your event, it's just emwmusic@gmail.com.
emwmusic@gmail.com.
Yes.
Reach out to Eric, because he's, if you needed to pick a brain, this is the guy's brain to pick. If you're a dick, don't email him. But, you know, if you're serious about it, he will be serious about you.
Yeah. Yes.
Fair enough?
Yes, absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely.
All right. Last question. As a sound guy, this is the one I almost asked. There's a two-part question.
Yeah.
What's the stuff you hate that bands do? And this is good. This is a good advice segment for all bands that are just... Maybe not, well, even like experienced bands, you never know. Because Eric he's been at it for 15 years, so here it comes.
And for any genre, and this is all inclusive, I'm going to say rehearsing during soundcheck. Soundchecks are not for rehearsal. They're not for doing final figuring out of your songs. It's not to work out kinks. It's to make sure that you're ready to perform. Your show that evening, it's a, you know, you're working with other artists that need to get on stage and check their stuff too, make sure they can hear everything. So it, you know, there's a certain amount of work that I suppose I hope that is done prior to getting there that day, and then when it isn't and it's clear and on stage and we're kind of waiting around for that band to get off the stage so we can check other artists and get things set up, that's yeah.
I'm going to turn this into a three-part question.
Oh, actually. I've expanded that one.
Yeah. What is the worst sound guy band experience that you've had to the point where you just like threw your you grabbed your pencils and your pens and you were just like, "Fuck it." Has that ever happened?
I don't know if I've ever said "fuck it." There was definitely someone I worked with here in Ottawa that the one night where the tones, the sounds, the volume off the stage, it was just an uncontrolled set of noise and so loud that by the end of it, I was just utterly frustrated because I think, you know, as you're trying to develop the music scene, as you want to encourage people to come out and check shows, I felt like that the only thing this band was trying to do was give everyone hearing damage. And then they were pretty much laughed and seemed happy about the fact that they might have done that, and I just told them I never wanted to see them on my stage again.
Yeah,
it's just there's so many people out there working hard to get people to come out and just check things out and support and, you know, give other artists that first chance to maybe perform an amazing song for people. And if people don't want to come out because it's that volume and they're deaf afterwards, then
yeah,
it's discouraging.
From my point of view, like I've always gone from the artist point of view. I'm the guy on stage, and I've always tried to work with the sound guy because he's working with you people. Yes. He's not working against you. You don't have to fight with him.
Supposed to be, yes.
Yeah.
I'm not going to defend all sound engineers and say that's always the case, but
sure.
Yes. I consider myself a host. I know the venues I'm generally in if I put on your show. So
I think the sound guy is like on your team. Like he can make your night great. And he can make your night really not great. But it's very based on what you are doing on stage. If you guys are going to go up there and be some prima donna dicks, then maybe that's if you have a bad show, maybe you should blame yourselves. But you know what I mean? Talk to your sound guy, enjoy your sound guy, shake his hand, know his name, and just, you know.
Well, it's interesting because I've grown to know at this point that despite someone being an audio engineer for, say, your concert, doesn't necessarily make them a music guy.
Yeah.
And that's where there is some separation as to that audio engineer might not be tying things together in terms of a performance versus say being a music oriented guy myself, where you know I like to discuss with the bands the perspective, the take on it, where sounds are sitting, where volumes are at, and how they'd like to have themselves represented in their live format. So
yeah, like I said, he's on your side, so
I'm trying.
And until he's not.
Yeah.
Anyway,
then you know. No, I don't think you know. I've never done. I've been told off a whole bunch of times. Apparently, one guy was a part of his performance. There's always like,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's funny. I just did a Franco-Ontarian run, and I know enough French, and I can speak French if I need to, and I understand. And but you know, obviously during the performance, hip hop performance, Franco-Ontarian hip hop, it's happening so fast that I'm not really catching everything.
Sure.
And then I just pretty much imagine that all the lyrics are "fuck the sound guy." I'm just like, yeah, I'm like, you know that song, that one, that's got a great beat. Like, you're just telling me to fuck off the whole song, right?
Right.
Like, yeah, pretty much.
that's fucking hilarious. Okay. Last part of this, once two-part, now three-part question. What's your best advice you can give to bands at a gig? If you're the sound guy, they're coming in. the face he had right there.
Oh, man. You know what? My favorite advice to give to any band that I'm working with as the sound engineer is just to tell them, is to encourage an environment and to tell them to let their focus be on their songs, their music, and making their vision of what that's supposed to be come alive on stage. I don't want them to worry about the lights. I don't want them to worry about, you know, okay, during this lead, that guitar needs to be turned up. It's like, okay, I do have a background in the music. I've done the mixing for bands. I can feel this stuff out for you. Mm-hmm. And I just want them, you know, don't worry about maybe this person not getting in. Like, there's so many things that the artists are thinking about. And all I want them to do is just to think about their songs and the show that they're about to put on, and anything I can do to help them just streamline and erase all the other little worries of in a venue and merch sales and who's running this and is there someone at the door, and there's so many things, and it's just, yeah.
Do you find you get more attitude from newer bands or established bands?
That was always, it's the middle
part
ground.
Four question,
yeah. Yeah. It was because, yeah, we're at the Live Lounge, you know, I dealt with 60 to 90 local musicians every year for about 8 years in a row.
Yeah.
And obviously there's some overlap, but I met so many new ones and I got to book new ones, and I met so many people that, and that, you know, I guess thankfully enough, I presented myself and got a reputation, I guess, for working with the bands and doing good sound and trying to help people just, again, put on good shows so we can encourage a better community here in Ottawa. And And then, of course, like, I go into the upper echelon of people that were so nice. Like, you know, the first time I worked with Hawksley Workman, and it was just, everyone was told to, like, not go in his green room and don't talk to him. And he doesn't, like, he doesn't want to interact or some of the stuff. And I remember just going back there and just being like, hey, how's it going? And he was like, why is no one talking to me?
Oh, my goodness.
Just like, yeah. Okay, yeah. And you've, so...
Well, it's uncharted territory for some people because they get intimidated for sure. You know, from you going in there, yeah, you're the sound guy, so you have that.
Yeah, but there was kind of an open invite, and he is actually quite a storyteller and likes and enjoys meeting his fans. And I really felt like there's that level of established artist who was always accommodating and I'm just always just happy to make that performance. But it was that band that's maybe had like two hits on the radio.
Yeah,
they're the ones, and they're now like the first time maybe having established management and like their booking agents on their like first real run of like, you know, more recognized venues throughout Canada.
Sure.
And those are the ones that are just suddenly like, don't you know who we are?
Oh, fuck
and,
off.
And it's just, okay, you know, 8 months ago, you like, no matter what kind of audio situation you were walking into, you were going to play the show because you were growing, you wanted the exposure, you wanted the chance to keep like, you know, growing as a band and getting your music out there. And now it's suddenly been a bunch of months and you've got a whole bunch of plays on radio, but so now you can't use that equipment or you don't want to accommodate, or now it has to be like this way and mm-hmm. there's no other way to go about the show. It's a struggle at points.
It's all fucking amazing, like, experience advice, though. Like, because you've been through all that. Like, you're speaking from everything that you've seen and you've done.
Yes.
So
yeah.
It's, like, true to heart, kids out there.
Yeah.
Like, this guy might be the guy behind your board. So, who's been around for fucking almost two decades. So, enjoy the advice and take the advice to heart. I guess the last question, and I'm just going to end it here, is, like, for a newer band,
yes.
What advice would you give them to just like, not so much a sound guy, not so much like be on the radio, but just to succeed as a band from being on the inside of the inside of the music? Because so many of the people that I think I know are just like they're the talent. There's my finger quotes.
Yes,
you know. What do you do? Like, how do you go about it?
As just a brand new band?
Yeah, just trying to make a name and trying to get your name out there and not fucking up the sound guy, not fucking up other bands, just being a cool dude saying, hey, we're this new band. What do we do? From an insider point of view.
Well, again, first and foremost, to generate the opportunities, you just want to get out and support your friends and other local artists that are in your genre. And then when you do get an opportunity, you go about it professionally and actively promote, be accommodating. Things might not, you know, if you get a 20-minute time slot to open up, say, a Spectrasonic show here in Ottawa, and it's a first big chance for you to expose your band, you might not have the perfect scenario of how you might want to set up on stage, and it's not something to fight. It's something to just overcome and take that opportunity. And the same for just starting out in general. You know, there's this Avant-Garde, Live on Elgin, Pressed, Bar Robo. There's lots of little locations that are looking to help up and coming artists and let you put on your first like show
and embrace those gigs too, because those are the gigs you're gonna look back on and be like, yeah, that was a fucking great time, and those people were really cool to us.
Well, there's the people, you know, I don't want to speak for anybody, but the people that are overseeing bigger festivals, concerts, shows that you might like to open up for one day, it's like they do notice those things. They see that in their social media. They know who's playing whatever little venue. Even if their next show is at the CTC, mm-hmm. and that's something that they're booking, they do see who's playing, you know, that 40-person room and what kind of buzz they're generating. Have they promoted stuff in a good manner online, etc. So
cool. Yeah. Well, that's amazing advice from someone who's been behind the scenes.
This was the weirdest intervention I've ever been a part of.
Okay. Well, man, hey, everything you said makes sense to me, and I've been at this fucking 25 years, right? I just try and not be a dick to people.
Pretty much. Like, you can't... Again, we're in an industry where we're meeting new people, like, all the time. Like, you go out, you play a show, and you'll play with, say, two or three other bands that you might not have ever met before.
Yep.
And it's just about going out, meeting, and trying to, you know, we're all just trying to make the best of it that we can. And then, like, it's not...
Yep.
You only shoot yourself in the foot when you make things difficult.
You know, because you never know the people that you're being a dick to. It might seem, like, super, like, in your soul, like, yeah, everything is right, and I'm going to fucking blast my point, but someday you might need those people to help you out.
You know what? Absolutely. And I have had the fortune actually to meet a couple new artists in this past year who I'm a little excited about. Mm-hmm. And then I personally have talked to management companies that I know out in Toronto that I talk to regularly, they're fairly regularly too, and just been like, hey, like, and I start mentioning some names, and then even some of those people out there are like, actually, I know that name. And it's just, it's interesting because I certainly can show up at any gig and I'm not going to sit there and be like, hey, I'm so-and-so and I've done this and this.
No.
And I know they, like, who gives a shit? I'm like, I'm just there to make an awesome event. And you know, people that paid to see it and whatever we're putting on, enjoy their time that evening. So, but down the same, like I said, at the same time, if I get excited and something's awesome, then I can sit around and suddenly talk to people that are a little bit more established and get your name into their ears. And
yeah, for sure.
They're great to work with and they were awesome. And
yeah, man. Name drop, you know, word of mouth, and just, you know, you make a good impression.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be the greatest band in the world, but if you're like good dudes and who are trying really hard.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, cause no one starts out the greatest band in the world.
No.
No one ever does.
Nope.
And a lot of bands think they did.
Those are the ones I'm talking about, right? That.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to get at.
But you know, we could just go on now because, like, as an engineer, it's like I can tell you if that's your first album together as a band. Like,
right.
I can tell you if that's your second or third just by hearing stuff. So it's always, this stuff's fun.
Yeah, you'll feel it. Okay, this is Ego and Vice. We're going to play one more local tune. We're going to come back, and we're going to close out the night with Eric Worley, and we're going to play one of his... So I'm going to play a song from a local band. It's called Expandafuzz. This song is called It's Your Glow, UFO, off their 2016 release, Bluets. You can find Expandafuzz at expandafuzz.bandcamp.com. What they are, they're a post-punk psych pop. They're out from Ottawa, and they have a little bio here called Expandafuzz is a dark cuisine of droney hooks, garage spunk, and muddy pop, crushed with a velvet underground spirit, helium-flavored, and suicide dream. Sweet. That sounds pretty good. All right, this is Expandafuzz. It's called It's Your Glow, UFO.
Take it to your peeps and call it.
So that was Expand a Fuzz off their 2016 release, Bluets. That was a song called It's Your Glow.
Great band.
It's Your Glow, UFO. Pardon
great,
me.
Great band.
Yeah, it was a good band. All right, Eric. I think we're going to pretty much wrap this up. Yeah.
How do we wrap this up?
I don't know, man. Like, when is a, when is a song done? You just kind of go and go and go. Is there anything else, any other stupid things you want to touch on before we fucking nip this in the bud?
There's so much stupidity. There's stories. This is the drop in the bucket right now, just to get things rolling.
For sure. It's amazing. Like, if you know somebody for 15 years, there's so many crazy stories and so many funny things. But for this episode, I really wanted to touch on what you did, what you've done, what you're doing.
I'm on Facebook with EMW Music, and music is with a K. The C was taken, so I went German and M-U-S-I-K.
Sure.
So, I just did 12 shows, Franco-Ontarian hip-hop, which was fantastic. Headed into... Oh, man, I oversaw production at the Ottawa Public Library with Sarah McLaughlin and the mayor, and they were doing their instrument lending program.
Awesome.
Instrument lending program out of the Ottawa Public Library now, where all you need is a library card, and you could take out a drum kit. You could take out an acoustic guitar. You can essentially just, like I said, the same as borrowing a book, take something home and work on your craft.
Yeah, read a book, play an instrument, you fucking primates.
So, and then of course I just did a Spectrasonic show over the weekend, which was amazing, over at St. Albans Church. And before that I was at another newer little spot, All Saints in Sandy Hill. I guess it's a refurbished church, and they got this great brick room where I mixed a solo singer-songwriter.
Here's a question to ask you. Most of the times when bands book shows at bars, say they go to Zaphod's, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Say they go to House of Targ. Say they go to the 27 Club. There you go.
Yes.
Mavericks, De Cuff, or The Rainbow.
Yeah.
Normally those places have like sound guys.
Yes.
Is it possible for a band, if they wanted to hire you, could you bring in and not Trump, that's a horrible fucking term, but if you said, we have our own sound guy, is that a possible thing?
Absolutely. It's always an option for any band.
You just call the bar and say, we have our own sound guy, can we do this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And if anyone wants to, you know, again, if you want to contact me and use me in that manner, like, I also involve myself by listening to your music prior. I want to get the vibe of your band. I want to get the feel. We'll chat. We'll talk song structure, set, and everything. So,
which is awesome, to the point where, like, when you show up at a bar and there's just like a designated sound guy who do great work. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And they always make your band sound great. But if you wanted a specific thing, like you to come in.
Yeah.
You have that history, like you will actually take the time to listen to these bands and be like, okay, this is what it's going to be.
Let's tie it together and have a fun night.
Cool, man.
Yeah,
that's a great thing to do.
And then, you know, there's also just having a liaison.
Do I get some kind of discount?
You always have a discount.
He's one of my best friends in the world. He's been there since fucking the start of everything, as far as I can remember.
Just Y2K.
Yeah.
We were going to die. I don't know.
Right. And we've always called him an honorary member of GOAT, because without Eric, GOAT wouldn't have survived this long. Just because he gives his basement to us to perform, and he sits upstairs and watches his Toronto Maple Leafs, and we just blast that shit through his floor.
Everyone was starting their emails like, yeah, I'll the Leafs.
Yeah, that's
shit.
Right.
Yes.
This has been Ego and Vice, Episode 9. Eric Worley, thank you so much.
You're welcome, bud.
See you next week.
You've got a real attitude problem, McFly. You're a slacker.